Good morning, Bodhisattvas. The title of this talk is Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance. But before I start, I'd like to reflect a little bit. Not really related to the tragedy in Connecticut, but related to death. In the last couple weeks in my life, I've experienced several people, the deaths of several people. One was a Buddhist monk, 70-some-odd years old, thin, frail little guy, always was in his wheelchair and his maroon robes. And his robes always had smoke holes. He was always smoking cigarettes. Lived with AIDS for many, many years. And that's the last five or six where he was quite debilitated. And a woman with whom I work died 41 years old, in her sleep, suddenly, a heart attack, last weekend. And then Karen Van Auken, who a member here, died she had a stroke about a week and a half ago and went into the hospital and died. So, and Karen was probably about 70 as well. So I would like to quote from Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance to start the talk off. And this, there are four, the four methods of giving or generosity. Kind or friendly speech, beneficial action, and what's called, sometimes it's translated as identity action or cooperation. So those are the four guidelines and that I'll be talking about today and maybe for a couple more talks. This is from the guideline giving, generosity. I'll read one paragraph. A king gave his beard as medicine to cure his retainer's disease. A child offered sand to Buddha and became King Ashoka in a later birth. They were not greedy for reward, but only shared what they could. To launch a boat or build a bridge is an act of giving. If you study giving closely, you see that to accept a body and to give up the body are both giving. Making a living and producing things can be nothing other than giving. To leave flowers to the wind, to leave birds to the season, are also acts of giving. So, and I will talk about that paragraph later, but it's interesting to think about death as giving. So, the Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance. A Bodhisattva is an enlightening being in Buddhist cosmology, and as a being has chosen, rather than to reach nirvana and step over to the other shore and be a Buddha, has decided to stay until all beings are free from suffering. So in our tradition, a bodhisattva is one among us, and we are all bodhisattvas, who are working towards freedom of suffering. So we often have a chant here. What is the Bodhisattva chant? Beings are numberless, vowing to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, vowing to put an end to them. Dharma gates are boundless, vowing to enter them. Beings are numberless, vowing.
Way is unsurpassed.
But we can start at the beginning.
That's right, we started too late. All right. Anyway, where I wanted to get to is beings are numberless. Borrowing to freedom. It's an impossible task. So the tradition is of a bodhisattva, is our tradition brings together the two drivers are wisdom and compassion. Wisdom and compassion. Wisdom is insight into reality, the way things are. Prajna. Prajna means before knowledge. So it's a fundamental knowledge, before knowledge. Wisdom is before knowledge. Seeing into reality as it is. And in the way I understand it, seeing into reality is seeing that nothing has any unique essence. We call it emptiness. Everything is empty. Everything, you can't point to anything and say it exists, because it's totally it only exists in the dynamic context of everything that's been before and is happening now. And so when you see into that insight, compassion arises, as Milarepa, the Tibetan teacher, said. Emptiness, the concept of emptiness, engenders compassion. It's kind of an odd way to think about it, because oftentimes emptiness is looked at as negative, as absence of something. Buddhism gets a bad rap for that. But actually, emptiness is about the total interrelationship of all of reality. And from that comes compassion. And a bodhisattva manifests that compassion because she has wisdom. So, this was written by Ahe Dogen in the 13th century. And he wrote it, although he was an abbot and ran a monastery, or several monasteries in his life, he wrote this for lay students, so for folks who were not monks. The four methods, however, had been mentioned previously in Buddhist literature in a number of sutras, in the Lotus Sutra, in the Mahaprajnamika Sutra. They were referred to. But as far as I can tell, they were never expounded upon. And I'm sure somebody must have somewhere along the way. But this is the only place in what I would call our ancient literature that these have been expounded upon. And as we go through, or as I go through this, I think it's important to keep in mind that Dogen isn't talking about a superficial giving or a superficial kind speech or beneficial action. He's talking about these at a very, very profound level. And I'm going to make an analogy here. Occasionally I get a little miffed as mindful meditation is used in all sorts of ways in our culture today. It's kind of a rage in psychotherapy. And it is valuable. I want to say I get it. But it's not Buddhism. It's not Zen. And the difference is that in our practice, yeah, mindfulness is very, very, very important. But we practice to get at what it is to be a human being. We practice because of understand the great question. What is life? What is death? What is sentience? So mindfulness and mindful practices are wonderful, and they can be very useful. But, and this is an example of how generosity is a wonderful thing. But Dogen is dealing with generosity at a very, very profound level. So it's been described, there's different metaphors that have been used. He comes at these practices with big mind as opposed to small mind or everyday mind. Katagiri Roshi talked about in his commentaries on this that Dogen is using a universal telescope, not a personal telescope. Karen Suna used to talk about coming at this with a Buddha operating system versus a human operating system, and I think that's the difference, or that's how Dogen is writing about and exploring these pretty mundane kind of concepts. And finally, before I get into the first one, at the end of the essay, that's what it is. It's an essay. The last sentence is. Each of these four methods of guidance includes all four. Thus, there are 16 methods of guiding sentient beings. So they are all intimately connected. So, generosity. The term is that's used is dana. And again, I want to emphasize that this is not the dana of charity. This is not the dana of passing a bowl around to get money to keep the lights on. Dogen is talking about something. Now, that's part of dana. I mean, that is dana. That is generosity. That is giving. And you should put money in the bowl. Just saying. But Dogen's going beneath it. Dogen's going deeper to fundamentally what is the nature of giving. Dana is non... So, generosity. In Buddhism, we have what we call the three poisons. Three poisons. Greed, or avarice, grasping. Pulling in. Aversion. pushing away. And delusion, not seeing the nature of reality. And so, generosity is the antidote to, or the counterpart to, greed and avarice. The second of the four noble truths is suffering. Suffering exists. There's a cause of suffering, which is grasping, which is thirst. And the third noble truth is cessation exists. Cessation of that exists. And this is an interesting way to think about generosity. It's the cessation of grasping and greed. The cessation of grasping is the ground on which generosity rises. Generosity is also seeing the interdynamic relationship of everything. And by that I mean there is no way not to give. I'm giving a talk. You're giving me your attention. In order to give this talk, I had to sit down. You gave me the opportunity to sit down and do some study and do some reading. This talk, my giving, doesn't exist without your receiving. And in that, giving is all of that. Each breath that we take is a giving and receiving. I mean, we're all breathing right now, we're all breathing what we all just exhale. And we couldn't be sitting, paying attention, were it not for the fact that we were doing that exchange constantly, dynamically. In our meal chant, there's a line, and I'm going to blow this one as well, I'm sure. I don't even remember the whole line, but there's giver, receiver, and gift. Talking about the food. They are all one. Everything is so interdynamically penetrated that you can't give and you can't not receive. Your existence is giving and receiving. And giving can be thought of also, I didn't have the time to do this as much, but this is going to be more than one talk, so I can do it some other time. I think it's interesting to play with giving, or play with any of these. You could play with any of these, but particularly giving. No, all of them. You can do it externally. You can give to someone else, but you can give to yourself. Demonstrate or perform helpful conduct to others and to yourself. And when you do it, you really are doing it. Whether you do it to yourself, helpful conduct, or to others, there's no way you're not doing it both ways, if you know what I mean. So all of these could be explored that way as well. So the first one is giving. And what I'm going to do is just read a paragraph. Or read a few lines and then comment on them. So this is Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance. The Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance are giving, kind speech, beneficial action, and identity action. Now, when I looked at several of the sutras from which this is based, and that's all they said. I mean, there was nothing more than that. So Dogen took kind of liberty. Giving means non-greed. Non-greed means not to covet. Not to covet means not to curry favor. Even if you govern the four continents, you should always convey the correct teaching with non-greed. So he starts off by right there, giving is non-greed. Giving is not grasping. Coveting is you see something you want, whether it's a new pair of shoes or a new techno toy or somebody in the bar, and you want it. And you covet it, and it's sticky. I mean, right there is where stickiness occurs for us humans. And he uses the term curry favor. That greed is the basis of kind of dishonesty. I mean, being mealy mouthed and saying things to kind of get your way is to curry favor. And even if you govern many, many people, you should always convey the correct teaching with non-greed. The correct teaching. So he's being pretty clear here that this is fundamental. So again, greed, or giving. It is to give away unneeded belongings to someone you don't know, to offer flowers blooming on a distant mountain to the Tathagata, or again, to offer treasures you had in your former life to sentient beings. Whether it is of teaching or of material, each gift has its value and is worth giving. Even if the gift is not your own, there is no reason to keep from giving. The question is not whether the gift is valuable, but whether there is merit. Giving away unneeded belongings to someone you don't know. Offering flowers blooming on a distant mountain to the Tathagatas. The Tathagata is a Buddha. Let's just call it Tathagata Buddha. So this is where he's getting a little profound. That he's telling you that distant mountain has a flower on it that you can give away. In fact, you are giving away this very moment. You just aren't seeing that you're giving it away at this very moment. You are dynamically interconnected with that flower, and you can give that flower to the Tathagatas. At the same, so, and the line before that was giving your unneeded shoes, that blouse you haven't worn in 3 years, to someone you don't know. Bring it down to goodwill. Well, that, and giving a flower on a mountaintop, a blooming flower to the Tathagatas, is the same thing, and it's happening constantly. Even if the gift is not your own, there is no reason to keep from giving. The question is not whether the gift is valuable, but whether there is merit. And there is merit. There is merit. He says here, or again, to offer treasures you had in your former life to sentient beings. And I can think of this, offer treasures you had in your former life to sentient beings. Now, of course, I don't believe in former lives. I think of this as just kind of a way of talking. But, again, I think it's fairly profound. Because I can think of this a couple different ways, at least. Offer treasures you had in a former life to sentient beings. I can think of this evolutionarily. I can think of this, what gifts throughout the course of human evolution, or throughout the course of evolution, what gifts have been passed on and on and on to allow me to exist right now? My hand, for instance, probably started in Africa. I don't know. Who knows evolution here? How many years ago did the hand first appear on the plains of Africa? And here it is today. That's a pretty amazing gift of a former life. From a former life. I can also think of it personally. I grew up in a fairly poor family. My inheritance was a pittance. Of course, they had to be spread among six kids. But my father was the first person in his family to graduate from college. So he was a farm. He grew up on a farm in New Hampshire, and living the life that every person in his family before him had lived for millennia. And he went to college, and he was determined that his kids. That it was his responsibility to make sure all of his kids who wanted to, and we didn't all want to, go to college. He felt that was an obligation that he had. It was a gift he could give. Now, he had, most of his kids were not biologically his. It was a very confusing family. But most of them were not his biological kids. Some were adopted, some were not. But I was, so I was the last one. I was very kind of late in his career. And again, we didn't have much money. So he worked until he was 72. So it was probably my last year of college. And that's when he stroked. That's when he had a stroke. That's when he retired. That's when he had to stop working. But he was working to put me through college. So that's a gift from, if you will, a previous life. Or it's a gift that was given to me. treasure you had in your former life to sentient beings. He goes on. When you leave the way to the way, you attain the way. At the time of attaining the way is always left to the way. When treasure is left to just as treasure, treasure becomes giving. When you leave the way to the way, you attain the way. The way is the Buddha way. The way is the Buddha path. When you leave the Buddha path to the Buddha path, which means you give up greed and wanting to attain, you attain the way. When you leave the way to the way, you attain the way. You give up any desire to attain, which is cessation, which is the ground for generosity. At the time of attaining the way is always left to the way. When treasure is left just as treasure, treasure becomes giving. When treasure is left just as treasure, it becomes giving. And after the talk and tea and a board meeting, I'm going to go see Chasing Ice. Who's seen Chasing Ice here? Yeah. I can't tell you should see Chasing Ice, but maybe next week I'll tell you you should see Chasing Ice. I don't think it's here very long. But it's my understanding of it is that it's a photographer or a crew that basically put up time-lapse photography on glaciers and just kind of watch what happened. And as you can imagine, a lot of them just fell into the ocean. But leaving a treasure, just as a treasure, to me is leaving the Arctic National Refuge, just as the Arctic National Refuge. When treasure is left to just as treasure, treasure becomes giving. It's a National Wildlife Refuge. It's green spaces. You can all make the connection between greed and attaining and wanting and the destruction of natural areas. They go hand in hand. It's giving and receiving. You give yourself to yourself and others to others. The power of the causal relations of giving reaches to devas, human beings, and even enlightened sages. When giving becomes actual, such causal relations are immediately formed. And here he's talking about the dynamic interrelationship of everything. You give yourself to yourself and others to others. How can you give others to others? Well, you're participating in it. You're always participating in it. You can't not participate in it. Giving is the nature of our existence. And the power of causal relations of giving reaches to devas, human beings, and even enlightened sages. When giving becomes actual, such causal relations are immediately formed. Giving is cause and conditions. And it's constantly going on. One of the things that when you give yourself to yourself and others to others, there's a practice that I occasionally use called, I think it's pronounced Nikon practice. And it's as I've been taught it, it's fairly simple and oftentimes done on a daily basis. Sometimes I do it at the end of the day. And it's a reflective process. And it's basically asking oneself three questions. And I frame it in a day. So what happened in the last 24 hours? What have I received in the last 24 hours? What have I given in the last 24 hours? And what difficulties have I caused in the last 24 hours? But it's the basis is this giving and receiving. That dynamic. And sometimes it's what have I given myself in the last 24 hours? Did I give myself the luxury of getting a massage? Did I give myself space to do something I would not otherwise have done? Have I given someone else space to do something that they might not otherwise have done? I found it useful, but it is based, so it's a practice, a kind of a pragmatic practice that is based in just simply asking the question, what have I received and what have I given? Buddha said, it's almost time to quit. I'll just do one more paragraph here for a sentence. Yeah, I'll do the whole paragraph. Buddha said, when a person who practices giving goes to an assembly, people take notice. You should know that the mind of such a person communicates subtly with others. Therefore, give even a phrase or a verse of the truth. It will be a wholesome seed for this and other lifetimes. Give your valuables, even a penny or a blade of grass. It will be a wholesome root for this and other lifetimes. The truth can turn into valuables. Valuables can turn into the truth. This is all because the giver is willing. That first line, Buddha said, when a person who practices giving goes to an assembly, people take notice. So this is not, again, I want to emphasize, this is not when somebody who's known for giving to charity goes into it's not that kind of recognition. It's a foundational recognition of people who understand the nature of giving. And, you know, sometimes people will say, I feel a certain energy around that person. Well, it may be this kind of presence. Somebody who really operates from the understanding that of interconnectedness and how we are constantly, I mean, we're so tied in giving and receiving. We are giving and receiving, and we are the gift. And it can be very simple. It can be a blade of grass or it could be a penny. It's really irrelevant. It's really irrelevant. It's the understanding that's behind any action. It's the understanding that's behind a greeting. Is it a greeting that's superficial? Is it a greeting that's empathic? Is it a greeting, or is it a greeting that's basically greeting oneself? And that intimacy. I'm going to quit. I'm going to stop. I haven't even got through giving yet. Any questions or comments? Yes.
I was wondering if you had any thoughts about how the giving away of flour on the mouth occurs.
Well, you know, it is mystical. Dogen is kind of mystical in some way. Some way he writes. This is how I understand it, is that there's giving that's going on right now, of which I'm a part, but my conceptual framework doesn't understand how I'm a part. But given the nature of reality, I mean, I'm not consciously, as you know, a sentient being giving away that flower, but at a foundational level, that flower being given to the Tathagata, I'm connected to that. That's how I understand it.
Okay.
I just used a bunch of words to conceptually describe something that is non-conceptual. Any other questions or comments?
Give me a question, for sure, a question. You were talking about prajna as what, pre-knowledge?
Prajna is wisdom.
Wisdom.
It's translated as wisdom. Sometimes it's translated as insight, and by that it's kind of insight into the the nature of reality.
So it's kind of
but the words, the
pre-analysis of things, or
when I say it's before knowledge, that's the etiology of it, prajna, before knowledge. But it's translated as wisdom.
Before knowledge, okay. And when you were talking about meditation that wasn't Zen, I almost felt like there was a connection there, is that when we, psychology, and granted it's probably a good thing that they are using some form of it, but it seems that there's more of a project or a scheme involved. I want to calm my emotions, I want to do this, and prajna is just seeing the mind as it is without judgment, without this judgment, I want to calm it or be a better person or something. I just want to know who I am.
Know who I am, know, experience reality as it is. Not with a goal to... our practice is... Our meditation practice is... sometimes referred to as good for nothing. You just do it, and it's contentless, or it's not, but it's. It's not to attain a goal. It's not to become a better person. It's really not to. There's no aim there to. Understand our neuroses. Now, oftentimes that stuff happens. But so the distinction I was making is that, and it's just a distinction that perhaps of words, is that, and it's just one of my pet peeves, actually, is that I think it's a diminishment of the serious profundity of our practice, our Zen practice, our Buddhist practice, or the teaching of the Buddha, to simply think of it as being more aware and mindful of what we're doing. That's part of it. But we talk about the great question in Zen and great doubt. It's kind of more existential than that. Was it? Helpful. That's okay. That's okay. Sometimes I'm helpful, sometimes I'm not. Any other questions or comments?
So, getting back to the flower on the mountain, is the fact that I could go to the mountain and take the flower. But I'm not going to do that. Is that in a way giving it away?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one way. Yeah. Yeah. One more, and then we'll break, if there is one.
Yes. You talked about being able to give something away that wasn't yours. What does that look like?
Okay, I'm going to just... So when Leo was playing his instrument, he did a lot of breathing. I'm just getting kind of basic here. And he probably breathed in a lot of the molecules you breathed out. And then he breathed them out. What was yours in that? What do you claim is yours? Was it that molecule that went out?
Is it still yours? He picked it up. And that's kind of just a bait. I mean, that's kind of a one way to think of it.
Huh.
That we are. Everything is so frigging impermanent and permeable and dynamically dependent on everything else. Everything is not yours, and everything is yours. Did that help?
don't answer. All right. So I think we're up for.
Okay.